Report of Council Meeting, Part 2, St. Helena, California, June 22, 1902. Conclusion of Report of Council Meeting held in the Sanitarium Chapel, St. Helena, California. Mrs. E. G. White. I have before me another manuscript, not yet copied, a portion of which I will read. April 8, 1902. To my brethren in responsible positions in the medical missionary work. I have this night been passing through a severe conflict. In the night season, I was in an assembly where important business was being transacted. Words were spoken in regard to the rebuilding of the Battle Creek Sanitarium. A paper on this subject was read before believers and unbelievers. I listened attentively to all that was spoken and read. One point was mentioned that I wished to notice particularly. It was in regard to the profits accruing from the working of the Battle Creek Sanitarium, not being used outside the state of Michigan. One of authority stood before the company and spoke words to which all listened with the deepest interest. A most solemn impression was made by what he said. He spoke of the mistakes that had been made in the past by similar resolutions regarding the income of the sanitarium. He said that these restrictions were not inspired by God, but were of human devising. The means coming to the sanitarium was brought by people from all parts of the world, and should not be used in one state only. God never made provision that his money should be thus localized. Grave mistakes have been made by following resolutions that are contrary to the mind of God. The principles underlying the establishment of the Battle Creek Sanitarium. In the providence of God, my husband and I were largely instrumental in founding the Battle Creek Sanitarium. The Lord instructed us to establish this institution. To get the work started, we called for means from every quarter. We told the people that if they gave of their means to establish this institution, they would have a voice in its management and would receive of its profits. Afterward, it was thought best not to pay dividends on the stock, and to this we agreed. But from the light given me at the beginning of the sanitarium work, we were led to encourage the people to believe that after they had helped to establish the Battle Creek Sanitarium, it would in time repay them by assisting them establish similar institutions in different parts of the country. Time and again we have stood before congregations and made this promise, pleading with them to help us firmly establish this institution, and assuring them that in turn it would help them when they were ready to establish institutions in other places. No one now has a right to change this plan so well understood at that time. The Lord has given special instruction that, whenever a sanitarium or a school is firmly established, it is the duty of the strong institution to help a sister institution that is weak and sickly. The medical missionary work in Australia. In order to establish the medical missionary work in Australia, our workers made many sacrifices and endured much privation and disappointment. When Brother Simmons opened treatment rooms in Sydney, he was greatly embarrassed for want of facilities. In relating his early experiences, he has said, "If only I could have had some of the old instruments that have been laid aside by the Battle Creek Sanitarium as useless, how rich I should have felt. But I came barehanded into an unworked field. We studied and planned in every way to begin the work that we had been sent to do. Thus, the sanitarium work was begun in Australia. While we were trying to establish this work, I told the brethren in America that we had scarcely anything with which to carry forward the work. At first, we had a very small constituency there to depend upon for support, and hence we called upon our brethren in America to help us. We received some means from this source. Several liberal offerings were sent from California, and we thank God for them. I do not know what we should have done without them, but years ago we should have had a fully equipped sanitarium in Australia. The managers of the Battle Creek Sanitarium should not have rested until the workers in that new field were supplied with the necessary means to build a medical institution. I do not say that this burden was placed upon Dr. Kellogg, for he had his hands full. But it did rest upon the managers of the institution, and they should have felt the burden. Within 2 years after we landed in Australia, we should have had a sanitarium in operation there. What an impression a well-equipped medical institution would have made on the people during all this time. True, we have had a small sanitarium in Sydney, but that is now closed, before the new building at Warunga is completed. Brother and Sister Burden and their co-workers have opened in Sydney a hygienic restaurant, which is well patronized and is doing much to remove prejudice. We are now very anxious to open to the public the large new sanitarium near Sydney, so that the people can better comprehend the nature of the work that we are doing for the sick. If we had had such an institution years ago, we should have found our way into places that are now closed to the entrance of truth, and which may forever remain closed. I have had to guard my brethren carefully against making mistakes in this work. When they were searching for a building site for the Sydney Sanitarium, some thought that it would be well for them to build in a section of the city where the most wealthy lived. I saw no light in this proposal, for we could not help the wealthy so much by being near them as we could by placing our sanitarium several miles out in the country, where they would have to come to us instead of our going to them. If we located among the wealthy and should undertake to help the worthy sick of all classes, some of those standing high in the social world would be fearful of lowering their social standing by coming to us for treatment. Besides, it is not best for us to be situated where the framers of laws can watch us closely and be in a position to prosecute us readily for Sunday labor, if in some respect we do not exactly meet their mind. I have closely watched point after point in the various steps leading up to the building of the Sydney Sanitarium. The brethren found a beautiful spot for the institution. It is out in the country, a few miles from the city, and is just the kind of a place that the Lord wants our brethren to choose for such institutions. On this place is a large orchard, which will yield an abundant supply of fruit. The sanitarium building is a plain, simple structure. The doctors Cress, Brother and Sister Burden, and others have put into this institution all the means that they could spare, giving to their utmost. The builders have worked for the lowest wages, but for a time all work had to stop. The brethren could go no further on account of lack of means, when in this country means that was lying idle could have been sent them just as well as not. Our sanitarium in Australia is not yet in running order, but we thank God that after so many years of hard struggling and privation, we are now able to say that the Sydney Sanitarium will be opened very soon. Our brethren there have succeeded in securing, at a low rate of interest, money sufficient to finish the building and partially equip it. The duty of the Battle Creek Sanitarium to establish the medical missionary work in Australia. At the beginning, we used our influence in every possible way to make the Battle Creek Sanitarium succeed. Years later, when it had become prosperous, and when in Australia I was struggling to establish a similar institution there, the Lord said to me, "Call upon the Battle Creek Sanitarium to divide some of its facilities with the sanitarium to be established in Australia." I called upon them to do it. Did I get anything from them? Not a thing. W. C. White. Nothing from the institution. You receive something from individuals, from Dr. Kellogg and from his brother. Mrs. E. G. White. Yes, we received some gifts from individuals, but I was calling for gifts from the institution, not individuals. I did not want personal gifts. I asked that the long-established institution strengthen the weak, sickly institution that with tottering steps was just beginning to walk. This was just what the Lord instructed me to do. The Battle Creek Sanitarium, blessed with a large patronage, should have been anxious to help to establish sister institutions in needy fields. Its managers, from a study of their Bibles, should have understood their duty, and should have been forward to act an unselfish, noble, generous part to others less favorably situated. Some have said, of course, that the sanitarium could not do this because it has been in debt. But this does not excuse it from establishing new sanitariums, and there is no good reason why it should be in debt. The patronage was sufficient to enable the institution, with wise management, to pay its debts. It is not just for the institution that has been established for years to refuse to help the institutions in foreign fields, which have nothing with which to establish and carry forward the same line of work in a successful manner. Too often God's workers have been allowed to go barehanded into places where Seventh-day Adventists are unknown, to attempt unaided to establish an institution, with practically no means with which to carry forward their work. These workers have been encouraged to press the work just as rapidly as possible, but they have been given nothing with which to advance. Our God does not work in any such way. I hope these things will never be repeated. Never again do I want to walk the floor night after night, for months, in an agony of distress over the thought of what the results of these refusals to act will be upon the persons bearing responsibility and upon our people and work. The restrictions under which the Battle Creek Sanitarium is now working. W.C. White. I have here copy of the findings of the citizens of Battle Creek who investigated the management and affairs of the Battle Creek Sanitarium. The paragraph relating to the use of the funds of the institution may throw some light on the attitude of the Battle Creek Sanitarium toward the Sydney Sanitarium. It reads as follows. It has been clearly demonstrated to us that no profits to the institution can ever accrue or be lawfully paid to any private party or parties whatsoever, that no funds of the institution can be lawfully sent outside the state to build or support other enterprises of any kind, that any and all revenue of the institution must be devoted to the philanthropic and charitable work, and to developing and extending the facilities of the institution itself, and for these purposes only, that all the property of the institution is held in trust for the above philanthropic and charitable purposes only, that title to any of the property of the institution can never be passed to any private party or parties whatsoever, but can only be transferred at the expiration of the statutory limit of the corporation to the trustees of another corporation organized for the same purposes and under similar restrictions. Mrs. E. G. White. Did God devise these restrictions? This is not the way in which He works. Again and again it has been presented to me that not one thread of selfishness is to be drawn into God's work, because it misrepresents Him and makes it appear as if the defection rested upon Him. God's mercy is unbounded. There is no limit to His charities and His benevolence. And there are to be no restrictions placed upon the charities and benevolence of our sanitariums. A sanitarium that God supports should have power to divide its blessings with a sister institution in need of facilities to do a similar work. I suppose this restriction in regard to the use of funds explains why nothing was sent from the Battle Creek Sanitarium to help us. The Lord does not design that His work shall be confined to any one place. He is constantly turning the wheel of His providence. We cannot foresee the circumstances under which we may be placed in the future. Those who bind themselves with a single yoke or a single cord are in need of divine enlightenment. The Lord is not pleased to have His people bound by any such yokes. He wants every yoke broken, every cord severed. His work is one in all parts of our world. In the early days of the message, my husband and I worked on an entirely different basis. I remember when we secured a little home in Battle Creek, Father said to me, "Mother, we must economize in every way we can until every minister in this conference has a house as good as ours." We tried to work upon this plan. For years, my husband always carried a little passbook containing a subscription list for some minister's home. When one laborer was provided for, he would begin to work for another. This illustrates the principle of unselfishness with which God desires flourishing institutions to deal with those which are less fortunate. To draw away from this principle just as we have reached the borders of the Promised Land is utterly contrary to the spirit that characterized our work in the beginning, and in the name of the Lord, I forbid it. W.C. White. I should like to ask Judge Arthur if that clause was not inserted at the time when our brethren were trying to get free from taxation. Was not that provision made more as a means of securing favor from the state legislature and of becoming free from taxation than it was to represent the real desires of the managers of the institution? Judge Arthur, I think, Brother White, that is true. I do not think that the brethren understood, when they incorporated the association, that the act under which it was being done provided that its means should not be used outside the state. That, I think, was not understood and realized until after the institution was organized. And when Dr. Kellogg's and the board's attention was called to the fact, I think they would gladly have corrected it, if it had then been possible. I remember when the appeal came for the sanitarium to assist in establishing a sanitarium in Australia, that this prohibitory clause stood in the way of the managers doing anything directly in that behalf, and an effort was made to see whether it were not possible in some way to circumvent this statutory restriction and let the sanitarium send $5,000 to Australia. The sanitarium at that time had charge of a trust fund of $5,000, which it was thought might possibly be transferred to the International Medical Missionary and Benevolent Association, and perhaps in that way, and through that institution, it could be sent to Australia. This fund is now controlled to some extent by the International Medical Missionary and Benevolent Association, and an effort is being made to find some way, if possible, to construe the term of the trust so as to let that particular fund go to the sanitarium in Australia. And effort has been made in recent amendments to the Charter of the International Medical Missionary and Benevolent Association to enlarge its scope of work so that, if possible, means contributed to that institution could be given to the work in Australia. All parties concerned were anxious to have assistance sent forward without delay. The only difficulty in the way of the sanitarium's doing so was this statutory restriction. Mrs. E.G. White. Is not that a yoke? Judge Arthur. It limits the usefulness of that institution to such an extent that I think Dr. Kellogg now recognizes the fact that it ought to be reorganized. I am strongly in favor of reorganizing it. It is the only one of our medical institutions, except St. Helena Sanitarium, that is not organized under the general plan adopted by the General Conference at South Lancaster for the organization of our sanitariums. I recognize the evil, and I think we ought to try to remedy it. When this question came up after the fire, and the condition of the institution was being investigated by the Committee of Citizens of Battle Creek, this restriction was one of the things that was unearthed, and it was noticed that according to the provisions of the Act under which it was incorporated, none of the funds of the institution could be used outside the state. I think an effort should be made, if it is possible to do it, to reorganize that institution on a basis entirely different from the one on which it now rests. In times past, I have had several talks with Dr. Kellogg on the advisability of such reorganization, so that it might be freed from some of these restrictions. Until recently, he has not been able to see the necessity for doing so under circumstances then existing. I had a talk with him, however, about this same matter just before he left for Europe, and I am sure he has begun to realize the necessity of such reorganization, and to see that as now organized, the sanitarium at Battle Creek is entirely too circumscribed and limited in its powers. Mrs. E.G. White. I hope it will be reorganized, because it does not now stand right in the sight of God. Judge Arthur. I am satisfied myself that you are right. There is not a question about it in my mind. To tie up that big institution by the restrictions with which it is now tied up was a fatal mistake, and I think Dr. Kellogg now recognizes that there should be some change. In his talk with me about it just before leaving for Europe, he stated that we must do something to widen its scope and enable it to enlarge its usefulness, and that both it and the St. Helena Institution be brought into line with the other sanitariums. W.C. White. My purpose was, first, to call attention to the fact that our brethren there did not intentionally shape the policy of the institution this way, and, second, to emphasize the importance of those who are organizing a Christian work, not only to have liberal plans, but to make sure that these plans are not circumscribed and crippled by legal limitations. Judge Arthur. That is one of the difficulties we are constantly having to contend with. We have not in the past paid enough attention to those things which belong to Caesar. While in this world, we must look to these things. I think you are exactly right, and I am glad that that light has come to you, and that you are now looking into that feature of the work, for we are continually being hampered and crippled in our work by trying to do things without paying proper regard to the restrictions that the state puts upon us. Mrs. E.G. White. I am so glad that Judge Arthur is with us at this time. I have great respect for his judgment. God has wrought for Judge Arthur. He surrendered himself to God, and God wrought for him. And I believe that he is living in the light of God's countenance, and therefore I feel pleased to have him with us today. The disadvantages of large sanitariums. It is an abomination in the sight of heaven for any man to take the control of an institution that should be under the control of God. If God is not allowed to use the Battle Creek Sanitarium to his glory, he will not preserve it, even if men make it the largest medical institution that the world has ever seen. It will be preserved only on the condition of being conducted on right plans. The light that has been given me for years is that instead of devoting our energies to the upbuilding of one mammoth medical institution, we should establish several smaller ones. It is almost impossible to find talent to manage an immense sanitarium in the way in which it should be managed. The workers are not under the control of the Spirit of God as they should be. His Spirit and grace are lost sight of, and a worldly spirit comes in. I have been shown that our institutions are to stand in the world as witnessed for God. By them, the third angel's message is to be proclaimed. There are two classes in our world, the obedient and the disobedient. Many of the sick and the afflicted who come to our sanitariums have long been disobedient, but they have high ideas in regard to the presence of God's abiding in the institution that they visit, and they are very susceptible to the spiritual influences that prevail. If all the physicians, nurses, and helpers are walking circumspectly before God, they have more than human power. The power of God rests upon every institution whose helpers are consecrated. But when an institution becomes so large that it cannot be properly managed, one half or two-thirds of its influence is gone. A distribution of facilities. Instead of erecting, I am glad that Brother Arthur can hear me say this, instead of erecting such an immense sanitarium in Battle Creek, in addition to all the other buildings that are already erected there, how much better it would be for our brethren to take $30,000 and still another $30,000 from the amount they are planning to invest in the large building and use this means in establishing other medical institutions in more needy places. God is able to make up to them that which it is their privilege to impart of the Lord's own gifts to assist in establishing the medical missionary work in other fields. If the Battle Creek Sanitarium had been removed to a salubrious climate, where, surrounded by ample grounds, it could have been a sanitarium in every sense of the word, the change of location would have been pleasing to God, and this step would have led to the establishment of similar institutions in many other places. This would have been better than the keeping up of a mammoth institution in one place. This is the way the matter has been laid before me again and again. Many plants should have been made in the cities of America, especially in the southern cities, where as yet nothing has been done. God desires His stewards to move wisely in the investment of means. In the erection of new buildings, He desires His servants to count the cost, to see whether they have enough with which to finish. He also expects them to remember that they should not gather up all the means possible to invest in one institution, but that they should work with reference to other institutions that must be established in other places. The Lord is working impartially for every part of His vineyard. It is men who disorganize His work. He does not give to His workers in any one place the privilege of gathering in so much means to establish an institution that there will be nothing left with which to establish a similar institution in the next place where one should be established. From the light given me, the managers of newly established sanitariums are to study carefully the necessity of economy in the expenditure of means, because they should be in a position to help other sanitariums that shall be established in other parts of God's great field. Even if they have a large amount of money in the treasury, they should bind about their expenses. Every expenditure made should be made with reference to the needs of similar institutions that are to be established in places where the third angel's message is yet to be proclaimed. For months, the Spirit of God has been impressing my mind with these things. Many nights, I have been unable to sleep more than a very few hours. Constantly, I have been writing and working, for the burden has been placed upon me, and I cannot lay it down. The worldwide field must be worked. We are not only to see the fields that are nigh, but we are to lift up our eyes and behold the fields afar off that are ripe unto the harvest. In Los Angeles, the brethren were following the example of the brethren in Battle Creek. They planned to pay a large price for a site in the business part of the city. They did not realize that they should build with reference to the next medical institution that should be built. God is impartial. All who work in accordance with His Spirit will work impartially. Threads of selfishness drawn into the web spoil the figure. Every portion of the Lord's vineyard is to be worked unselfishly. God is watching every movement. We have no time now to lose, for we are on the verge of the eternal world. WC. May I ask a question about the Los Angeles proposition? Our brethren say it is their intention to get into the country and have a country sanitarium, but for some months no progress has been made because of the hope of a gift of land near Oak Knoll. Recently, Railway President Harriman has been purchasing in that neighborhood. The question arose in my mind whether the same principle that kept us from locating at the end of Albert Street in Stanmore, New South Wales, where George Reed, the premier, and other wealthy and influential men lived, would not lead us to question the propriety of locating in Pasadena, right by the side of the wealthy men in that section? I fear that it should. We do not want to place ourselves in a position where we can be closely watched by those who, with their man-made laws, can make it hard for us if they so choose. Nor should we ever, whatever our position, give unnecessary cause for complaint against us as lawbreakers. God does not want us to parade before others our contempt of Sunday observance. We can avoid many things that would be liable to give offense, and that might sometime make it very hard for us. When the Sunday laws were being enforced in Australia, our brethren who were connected with the school came to me for counsel. "Sister White," they inquired, "what shall we do? Shall we work on Sunday just the same as heretofore?" I replied, "Sunday is the best day of the week on which to do missionary work. Let teachers and students devote this day to God. Divide the surrounding country into districts, assign a company to every district, and then visit the people every Sunday. Do medical missionary work. Such work will not excite opposition, and no one can prosecute you for doing it on Sunday. We are not to do anything that will bring upon us the displeasure of men before we have given them the warning message. We have a great work to do, and just as long as possible, we should avoid exciting opposition that will hinder us in the accomplishment of this work. Is not this good policy, Judge Arthur?" "Why, certainly. I have given the same advice to our brethren in the southern field. Our workers in that field have written me that it would go hard with our colored brethren and sisters if they were arrested on account of Sunday labor. Once convicted and placed in the chain gang, they could be compelled to work on the Sabbath, or else suffer the penalty, which might result in death. My counsel has been sought in regard to this matter. From the light that the Lord has been pleased to give me, I have advised the brethren not to encourage the colored people who embrace the truth to work on Sunday, but to instruct them that this is inexpedient because it lessens their usefulness and creates prejudice against the truth. I urge that the colored people be taught to spend Sunday in missionary work for their friends and neighbors. They can visit them at their homes and read the Bible with them. No one can find fault with them for doing this. In every way, they are to seek to avoid creating a feeling of opposition against them and their work. We know that all too soon the bitterest opposition will be manifested against us. When we are in danger of being prosecuted in the courts, we should plan to remain no longer in that place, but should go to another community to continue our work for the Master. Our Savior was familiar with opposition. He had to go from place to place in order to avoid collision with men who sought to persecute him. And his instruction to his disciples is, "When they persecute you in one city, flee ye into another. For verily I say unto you, ye shall not have gone over the cities of Israel till the Son of Man be come." Matthew 10, verse 23. The time has not yet come for us to work as if there were no prejudice. Christ said, "I send you forth as lambs among wolves. Be ye wise as serpents, and harmless as doves." Luke 10, verse 3. Matthew 10, verse 16. I have said to my brethren, if you see that by doing certain things that you have a perfect right to do, you create power of influences that will hinder the work of the truth, refrain from doing these things. Do nothing that will block the way for the presentation of the truth and close the minds of others against it. There is a world to save, and we gain nothing by creating prejudice and cutting loose from those we are trying to help. All things may be lawful, but all things are not expedient. We have no right to do anything that will obstruct the light that is shining from heaven. Yet by a wrong course of action, we may imperil the work and close the door that God has opened for the entrance of the truth. The final issue on the Sabbath question has not yet come, and by imprudent actions, we may bring on a crisis before the time. Refraining from work on Sunday is not receiving the mark of the beast, and where this will advance the interests of the cause, it should be done. Let us, if advisable, spend this time in missionary effort. God's mark, or sign, is His Sabbath, as is revealed in the 31st chapter of Exodus, verses 12 to 15. The Lord declares, "Verily my Sabbaths ye shall keep," verse 13. This we can do so long as we are at liberty, but if at any time we should be placed in the chain gang, it is possible that we would be compelled to work on the Sabbath, or else suffer the penalty, which may be death. Especially is this true of the colored people. We must take into consideration the conditions as they exist and act like men and women of good judgment. We must learn to use sanctified common sense. I have advised the brethren in the South that as they go from place to place, they must keep the channel of the heart unobstructed, so that they may constantly receive from the two olive branches the oil that makes them meek, tender, and lowly in heart, and that enables them to avoid arousing feelings of bitterness. Those who have taken the first step in condemning us are usually loath to acknowledge that they have been mistaken. We do not want them to close their hearts against the truth when it is presented to them. This is the advice we are giving to the workers throughout the southern field. You may say, "Sister White is in earnest." I am very much in earnest, and I cannot help it.